welcome to the Unscripted Wrestling Podcast. We're here for another pay-per-view retrospective. We're doing SummerSlam 91. I'm your humble, gracious, and sexy host, Daniel Hummer. I'm here with my brother, Doug.
Yo.
I'm here with the man of the hour, the man that rarely showers, Eric.
What's up?
He rarely does a lot of things, but I'm pretty sure shower is one of the things he actually does.
I thought of that today, though, so I wanted to say it at some point. And Stevie. Stevie's here.
Hey, how's it going?
Pretty damn good. We got a lot to get into, mostly SummerSlam 91. Beautiful event and a beautiful time period of wrestling, and we can't wait to talk all about that. Before we do all that, let's go to Doug with the plugs.
All right, make sure you listen to Boxman and Smart, the Dirt Sheet Dudes, every Wednesday and Friday night, Mixler.com/Dirt Sheet Dudes. They can be found on all your major podcast platforms. Usually around 10:15, 10:20-ish Eastern time, right after wrestling. Also, listen to us, 6:30 p.m. Eastern time, Friday nights, blogtalkradio.com/everythingunscripted. Of course, tonight, SummerSlam 91. Next week, we're doing SummerSlam 2000. In 2 weeks, on September 3, we're going to be doing Eddie Guerrero, Rey Mysterio feud retrospectives. On September the 10th, we're going to be talking WCW Monday Nitro from September 9th, 1996. September 17th, we might actually skip that week because we have something big coming up the next day, and then so on and so forth. Speaking of September 18th, join us September 18th in Merchantville, New Jersey for the Merchantville Toy Fair, presented by Play With This Toys and Collectibles. We'll be out there. We're going to be selling some toys, a lot of which we're actually going to be previewing over the next few weeks on the Unscripted Unlimited podcast, which you can join us for that tomorrow night. Same channel. We're going to be talking Big Brother and probably some UFC and doing some spotlights.
Yeah.
Sunday, 3 p.m. Eastern time here on the same channel.
Scaredy Cats.
Aaron, what are you guys doing this week?
We're going to be talking about the top 10 survivors in horror movies. So,
oh, that ought to be good.
Yeah, we got another list.
Those lists are actually going pretty well.
I agree. So that's what we're doing. If you made it through a horror movie without dying, at least one, even if you died in the sequel, you're eligible for the list. So it should be fun.
So I wonder I wonder if Cotton Weary is going to end up on anybody's list.
He might.
I mean, he should not have died in the opening scene of the third movie.
I agree.
That was stupid. All right. So Stevie's going to have a podcast coming up called the Wrestling Fan Club. Wrestling Fan Club podcast. It's going to start January 11th, right, Stevie?
Yeah, that's right. January 11th at 6 o'clock p.m.
Okay. Where are we going to be able to find it?
Well, I'm going to actually put it on Blog Talk Radio. I'm doing a career retrospective on Nature Boy Ric Flair.
Beautiful.
One of my favorites.
Beautiful. All right. And if anybody that is listening to this is interested, Stevie is looking for a co-host. So if you are interested in being a co-host, shoot him an email at skozlowski2019@gmail.com. We're going to also be putting it out there this week, you know, trying to get him a co-host. If nobody volunteers to be his co-host, we're just going to fire Eric, so Eric has to go over to his show.
What? I may have guests on, so if you guys are available, maybe you can, like, come on and join me for the first episode.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
We'll help you.
Yeah, we'll come out every once in a while.
Okay,
yeah.
Thanks.
We can help you.
So we're going to figure, make sure to keep checking for that updates. Join the Wrestling Fan Club page as well. So you'll keep getting updates from Stevie on there. He's been updating it frequently. So if you want to find out more about that, check that out. Check our group as well, Old School Wrestling, almost 30,000 strong. And we're doing well. So keep checking us out and supporting us. Anything else plug-wise?
Plug-wise, no.
Light news week, right?
Yeah, light news week. The only... obviously AEW Rampage tonight.
Yes.
The rumored debut of the best quitter in the world, CM Punk.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's going to happen or not. I personally don't care. because I'm not really a CM Punk fan.
I'm a huge CM Punk fan, but I don't care either because it's so many years too late. I don't even know if he's, like, in good shape anymore. I mean, like, he's probably...
Apparently he got himself in good shape for the Star Show heels.
Yeah. I don't know. There's just... I mean, cool. Okay. I'm just kind of sick of new people coming to AEW.
Right.
They're doing exactly what they said they weren't going to do.
They're doing exactly what WCW did. I mean, yes,
they're
getting content. They have a lot of content to fill, though.
Yeah, but what were the promises at first? The promises at first were you weren't going to have too much shows and overindulge the consumer. We broke that already. We got, like, fucking four shows, two on TV, two on YouTube.
Right.
We're not going to sign too many people. We're not going to have too big of a roster. That's obviously been broken.
Have they hit the 100 yet, like WCW did back in 96?
They have to. They got to be up there. And we're not going to sign too many legends and, like, old WWE guys that you only know by them. They broke that. So AEW has kind of betrayed me. Like, I do still enjoy some of the stuff I've seen, but I can't watch it on a weekly basis anymore because everything they told me they were going to do differently, they didn't do.
Well, I mean, they had to reel you in. All right, they had to get you in. They had to get you kind of hooked, and then they could pull the shit that they were pulling. It's basically, it's like...
That's how you lose people, though.
Right. Unless you really enjoy the product. Unfortunately, you and I have work schedules that really don't allow us to stay up to enjoy the work product, or enjoy the product.
But we could if it was good. And I, like, and there's not saying that it's terrible, it's just... I don't find it any less convoluted than WWE. Like, I don't think the storytelling's that great. I don't think the programs have been that much different. You know, I just don't see it as the alternative that I thought it was going to be. So that's why it turned me off a little bit.
Right. No, I understand. Also, I got to mention this. I actually just read this a few minutes ago. Sasha Banks is not in Phoenix for SmackDown tonight. And her status for SummerSlam is up in the air.
Why?
They're not saying. She had to miss last weekend's live events due to unforeseen circumstances. Bianca did as well. But they were both cleared at the beginning of the week. But something happened and Sasha's not in Phoenix for SmackDown. We don't know if she's going to be there for SummerSlam tomorrow night or not. A lot of speculation. I'm not gonna, you know, really add to that speculation, because to be honest with you, if it's for the reason that people are saying that it's for, I don't want to knock her. Cause you know, I want to try to be careful. You know, for once.
And you like her.
Well, yeah. That's all the only reason why I'm being careful.
Let's move on to SummerSlam.
Okay.
Fuck the news. All right, boys. SummerSlam 91. This is a big, big event. The WWF is still as hot as can be. Gates, 20,000. So, big money here.
Well, and they're home. They're in Madison Square Garden.
It took place in Madison Square Garden, New York City. A lot of people were excited for this. Who's the champion going in this?
Hogan.
Okay. And this is after the Ultimate Warrior run, right? Or no?
Like yeah.
The title run?
Yeah.
Okay. And do you want to get into a little controversy about Ultimate Warrior? Do you want to start with that? Or?
I can, wanna, yeah.
We could wait to the main event, but I think it kind of sets the stage.
Okay, so there was a little bit of an issue. Warrior, I guess a couple weeks leading into SummerSlam, he had called Vince and said, look, you owe me $550,000, which I actually think it was like $100,000. Well, I thought that's what it was at first, but anyway, you owe me $550,000. If you don't give it to me by SummerSlam, I'm not coming. Like, I'm going to no-show the event.
Yeah.
Or I'm not going to get in the ring. And Vince McMahon always had a rule, get the match in the ring, especially if it's been advertised.
Yeah.
So, rumor has it is that Sergeant Slaughter and Hulk Hogan actually volunteered to go to Warrior's house, beat the shit out of him, throw him in a trunk, and bring him to SummerSlam.
Hogan and Slaughter, right?
Hogan and Slaughter, yeah. But because they were part of the main event with him.
Yeah.
The main event was Sergeant Slaughter, Colonel Mustafa, and General Adnan versus Hulk Hogan and the Ultimate Warrior in a handicap tag match. The match made in hell with Sid Justice as a referee. And so they told Vince, they said, look, you know, we'll go do this. We'll get him here. And Vince said no, because if he decides to sue, not only am I getting sued, but you guys are getting sued.
Yeah.
So let's not do that. He goes, let me just pay the motherfucker. So he paid him. He paid him, and then at SummerSlam, right after the match was over, he fired him.
Wow.
As soon as Warrior came through the curtain, he looked at Warrior and said, oh, yeah, by the way, you're fired. Now, Warrior disputes this and says that he was suspended and he quit in protest. But, no, like, Vince fired him and said, look, he's done. But we need to get the match in the ring because it's been advertised.
Yeah, and he was supposed to enter a feud with Jake Roberts after this, right?
Correct. They had already started planning the feuds because it was going to be – they were going to start working tag matches. It was going to be Undertaker and Sid versus Undertaker and Jake versus Warrior and Sid.
But they obviously weren't able to do that.
Right. That's why Macho got inserted. That's why they actually had Undertaker and Jake crash the ceremony. So Macho could be inserted in that.
Gotcha.
But yeah, like it was a big, see, I never really understood it when I was a kid because I do kind of remember this, but I also remember like Mean Gene Okerlund, like after the SummerSlam report saying that Warrior basically just vanished. He ran into the back and nobody could find him. And I just remember being like, eh? Like, how is that possible? So, but yeah, so that's the big controversy with the Warrior. I mean, I don't understand because Hogan was working these handicap tag matches like all over like the loop.
Yeah.
But Hacksaw Duggan was his partner.
Yeah.
And Duggan was kind of part of the feud. So, like, I know, like, they want a Warrior and all that, but, I mean, in my mind, it's like, okay, Duggan's not a part of this thing anyway. It's not a part of SummerSlam.
Yeah.
So could we just, like, if Warrior was going to no-show, why can't you just have Duggan just come in and be like, look, you have to be our backup plan.
Yeah.
I mean, that.
They promised the match. And like you said, Vince does like to get the match in the ring.
Yeah. I'm just saying, and I agree with it, especially, like, if you made that promise.
Yeah.
But I'm also saying is that, like, you do have a backup plan. Because people will still pay to see Duggan.
It will. It will for sure. All right. We start this off with Coco Beware and Kato in the dark match. Coco wins. The first match on the card here, the British Bulldog, the Dragon, which is Ricky, right?
Yeah, Ricky Steamboat. which is weird. On, like, all his merchandise, like on his Hasbro and all that, he's named as Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. Gorilla Monsoon never called him Ricky Steamboat when he came back.
It was just the Dragon?
He just said the Dragon. But, like, on his on the T-shirt they had for him, on posters, like I said, on the Hasbro, and even Howard Finkel even introduced him as Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. But the words Ricky Steamboat never came out of Monsoon's mouth.
Well, the Dragon just sounds cool.
Yeah.
So three powerhouses, right? Bulldog, Steamboat, Tornado, against Power and Glory, Hercules and Paul Roma, and the Warlord.
Right, managed by Flash.
What did you think of this opener, Stevie?
I thought it was a solid opener. It was a good match to put over the baby faces, and the crowd liked it. But to have that kind of an opener was great. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, it was pretty much a solid one.
Eric, what did you think?
It was a fun opener. It, as Stevie said, it got the baby faces over. I give it a solid 6.
All right. Doug, was there much backstory going into this, or?
There was actually a feud going on between the Warlord and Davey Boy. They had actually met at every pay-per-view. They were in the ring together at every pay-per-view in the year 1991.
Because they were at opposite Survivor Series teams.
Opposite Survivor Series teams. They had a WrestleMania match against one another. They were in the Rumble at the same time. And then they also wrestled at that Tuesday in Texas pay-per-view. You know, in December of 91.
Ugh.
And Warlord did not go over one damn time.
Davey won every match?
Davey won every... Well, except for the Survivor Series match. Well, none of them won the Royal Rumble, and they were both actually the only ones eliminated from their respective Survivor Series teams.
Really?
Yeah. Warlord got pinned. Davey got pinned. Everybody else got disqualified.
Who pinned Warlord?
Piper. And Flair pinned Davey Boy.
Okay.
But yeah, so that was basically like the backstory of that. The one thing I do have to say about this match, I don't know if anybody else caught it. The finish. When Davey hit the power slam on Roma.
Okay.
And then he went to cover, but then he got off the cover. He rolled over looking like he was going to tag the Dragon. And then... instead went back to cover Roma, and Roma had already been laying there for like 7 or 8 seconds.
Yeah.
So Roma kicked out at 1. And then, you know, Steamboat hits the crossbody and, you know, gets the win. I'm pretty sure somebody got in trouble.
Yeah.
Now, I don't think Roma got fired later in the year, but he didn't get fired for that, I don't think, because he was still around in October. Because they did a show at the Royal Albert Hall in London, England. And Roma was there. All right, this was at the end of August. They would not wait a month to fire his ass, you know, for botching the SummerSlam finish. They would have fired him right away, I think.
Yeah.
So I don't know, but I'm pretty sure people did get in trouble, because I actually think Davey Boy, this actually might want it, because Davey Boy was kind of on like a roll, kind of getting a push.
Yeah.
But like after this, you know, he was the first one eliminated from Survivor Series, from that Survivor Series match, and a match that included Virgil. You keep Virgil in a match, but you eliminate Davey Boy.
Yes.
So obviously they're teeth.
Yeah.
And then Davey Boy ended up having to do some jobs for the Undertaker. So I'm pretty sure Davey Boy got in trouble for this. I'm not 100% sure, but I mean, Davey Boy looked out of it.
Yeah. This might have been a crack night.
I'm almost thinking maybe. I mean, I give it a 5.5, mainly because I thought the match was good until they fucked up this finish.
Yeah, I give it a 6 because I liked it. It was a botch to end it, but I thought it was a decent opener. And I like all the guys. I mean, I don't like the heels as much, but you had 3 strong baby faces, and it was a good way to put them in.
Yeah, 3 strong baby faces. I'm going to say this. I'm going to put the guy over. Hercules was very, very underrated, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, they should not have turned him babyface when they did.
He was better in the territories, though, wasn't he?
He was better in Mid-South, yeah. But when he first came in and was first managed by Bobby Heenan, he was really good. But then, you know, it just kind of fell off the rails and they turned him babyface, which they shouldn't have done. I mean, they tried to salvage his career with this Power and Glory thing.
I didn't mind that tag team.
I liked it too. Until, you know, they did a 59-second job for LOD at WrestleMania 7.
Yeah. But besides that, Stevie, did you give this one a rating?
Not yet, but I'll give it a 6.
3 sixes and a 5.5. Sounds good.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
All right. Now, next up, probably one of the best Intercontinental title matches of all time. Maybe one of the best SummerSlam matches of all time. Mr. Perfect with the coach. Let me be clear. This is not Jonathan Coachman.
It's John Tolos.
Against Bret Hart. Bret Hart wins by submission. This goes about 18 minutes. Doug, what was your thoughts on this one?
I actually thought this was a really good match. This was Bret Hart's coming out party. This is kind of Perfect's like swan song for right now because he had back problems.
Yeah.
And he was very much in pain in this match. But he did the job for Bret because Bret's his friend. And I really enjoyed it. I always thought they had really good chemistry. And I think they are, you know, I know a lot of people, including yourself, think Bret Hart is one of the most overrated wrestlers out there.
Well, I've never talked shit about his wrestling. I just hate his personality because he's a whitey bitch now. But he does do masterpieces in the ring. I love watching old Bret Hart matches.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'd say he's overrated.
I think these are two of the best. I thought that these were two of the best wrestlers in that time.
Yeah.
And, this match was great. I'm going to give this match an 8 right away. Just because of how good it was and what they were able to do. And the way Bret went into the sharpshooter. You know, it looked like he was trying to hook in a figure 4, but then he turns it over.
Yeah, that was good.
I do think Hebner rang the bell too soon.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah. Well, he's not known as the greatest referee of all time.
Yeah, I know.
But, yeah, I thought it was a masterclass. I liked that Bret ended it by submission. This could have very well been a main event. I mean, maybe not at the time, but this was the best match on the card. Wrestling-wise, this isn't my favorite match, but I loved what those two guys were able to do in between the bell.
All right, so this is actually one of my favorite, like, my favorite SummerSlam of all time, right?
Yeah.
Which is why we're doing this. And some of my most favorite matches ever are on this card. This Intercontinental title match actually does rank up there.
Does it?
Yeah. I mean, it's not my favorite match on this card either. I do think it's the best wrestling match, but I have... more sentiment towards another match on this show, so.
Yes, you do.
I know what it is.
Yeah, Kato and Coco.
No disrespect to those two guys, but you talk about some of the guys that are not on this card, like at all.
Like Duggan.
Duggan, Tito, Snuka.
Dino.
Yeah, because Dino was still there, actually. I mean, he was on his way out, but. He was still there.
Yeah.
Barbarian, Haku, and they don't get the dark match. I mean, Sean and Marty weren't even part of this thing.
And that really tells you how stacked the roster was at the time.
Right.
I mean, Coco and Kato have no reason, but the rest of these are big budget, like, matches. Like,
yeah.
big money matches.
Exactly. And, like, the purpose of a dark match, to be honest with you, for anybody that's not necessarily familiar with it, the dark match is basically, it is meant to get the crowd started. So they're already fired up by the time the show starts.
Right.
Okay. And Coco Beware, around this time, he was doing jazz.
Yeah.
But Coco was also still very over. And I'm not going to say that. I'm not going to say anything bad. I like Coco Beware.
Yeah. He's Kato.
Yeah. And Kato, Paul Diamond under a mask, by the way, he was very good in the ring, too. So, like, yes, they're two good workers. I'm just saying is that, like, you know, Duggan or Santana, you could have had Duggan versus Barbarian or Santana versus Barbarian or Santana versus Haku.
Yeah, there was big names that were omitted from this thing.
Or you could have had the Rockers take on the Orient Express in a tag.
Give Hart and Perfect a rating.
8.
Eric?
I think they say 9.5/10. I know this match is best match on the card. By far.
Stevie?
Well, I give it an 8 because it was a fantastic match and it was like straight up wrestling for like 18 minutes. So.
Yes, sir. I agree. I'm going to have to go 8 too because I just really like what these guys were able to do. It was wrestling at its finest. You have a lot of, like, this is the cartoon era. This is the era of not great wrestling. And it didn't need to be because it was still a good product. But these two were great wrestlers.
Yeah. And that's the thing, too, is that, like, you look at the 90, the early 90s of wrestling. Because, like, even in, like, the 80s, or, you know, the 80s was kind of cartoonish, but you still had, like, again, it's larger-than-life characters.
Yeah.
In the 80s. In the 90s, it wasn't really larger-than-life characters. It was more, okay, we're Saturday morning cartoons now.
Yeah.
And I'm not knocking any one of these guys because I'm actually a fan of a lot of the people that were here.
But, I mean, on here you have, you know, you got a cop, you have an accountant, you have
a Mountie.
A Mountie.
A dragon, a pooch.
Yeah.
I don't know what the fuck the Warlord was.
No, I don't think he does either.
He was a wrestling clinic.
You even have an Iraqi sympathizer on this show.
Yeah.
It's so diverse. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was so, like, I mean, and here's the thing, like, a lot of those guys that, like, portrayed these characters, they were really good workers.
Yeah.
And, like, if they would have had the opportunity to, like, portray themselves, you know, it would have worked out for them. But this was the era of the character. And, by the way, it had to be the era of the character because how the hell were you going to sell the action figures?
Yeah, because kids were the target demographic at the time.
And, by the way, like, at the height of this period, they had those, I don't think you remember or not, but they had WWF squirt heads. They were like the heads or whatever. And like they were basically like little mini squirt guns. You just squeeze them and water comes out.
Yeah.
I had every freaking one of them.
Did you?
You still have them? You still have them?
No. I have a Warrior one that I bought a couple of years ago sitting around here somewhere. But basically all of them got lost. A couple of them actually got stolen from me. And when I confronted it, the little bastard at preschool that stole him from me, he put my head through a wall.
Poor Dougie.
But, you know, he got his comeuppance so years later because in eighth grade he built a cherry bomb that got put in the toilet and then he got suspended. So,
Nini.
Karma came back.
Yeah. He was actually one of my best friends though in elementary school. We actually made up after anyway, but no, I had everyone because they had Hogan, Warrior, Savage, DiBiase, Boss Man, Jake, who were the six most marketable guys there. And then you had three tag teams, which is the Bushwhackers, the Rockers, and the Legion of Doom.
Those are probably the three most marketable tag teams.
Exactly. And I had every one of them. Because Dad didn't want to buy me, you know, a $10 to $15 squirt gun. These squirt heads cost like $3. So he's like, hey, you can have the whole set. I was just like, yay!
Yay!
So, no, I was happy. Like, I actually wish I still had some of them. But, you know, you try to rebuy them now, they cost you like $40-$50.
Yeah.
Really?
I'm not lying, unfortunately.
Wow.
No, this is one of the times I'm actually telling the truth.
Wow.
Yeah, no. Everybody gave this a rating, right? Brett and Perfect?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was Brett's first title, right? WWF title?
Well, it was his first single title.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, this was basically a coming out party for Bret Hart.
Was it?
Exactly.
Yeah. Which is weird because, you know, leading up to this, Perfect was actually doing the house show loop with Davey Boy. Yeah.
Well, he's facing Bret here.
Yeah, like, so I don't know, like, if Davey Boy fell out of favor or what the hell happened. I mean, he's definitely out of favor after fucking up that finish with Roma.
Yeah. Well, Roma sucks.
That was not his fault.
He still sucks. He's the worst four horsemen of all time.
Well, that's true.
All right, Nationals of Disasters against the Bushwhackers. This one had a lot of spectacle to it. It was funny. Like, you knew what was going to happen.
Oh, you knew the Bushwhackers did not have a prayer.
But I enjoyed the buildup of them beat of Earthquake was a nice monster heel at this time, and I liked what they were doing with him. And I liked that he beat up Andre, and they had Andre in his corner.
You know why they did that, right?
Why?
There was no way Andre was going to get back in the ring. So, and they actually had to have him start being on crutches. So they actually told Earthquake, they said, look, you know, like, you really need to get any more over than what you already are after what you've done to Hogan and all that.
Yeah.
But get, you know, we need to get you more heat. So take Andre out at the legs. This was actually Andre's last WWF pay-per-view appearance in the United States.
Really?
He worked the European tour, or he didn't work it, but he was there. But yeah, like, this is the last appearance of Andre on WWF TV in the States.
Damn.
Well, and here's the thing, and I've talked about this before. Andre was actually signed to go to the Universal Wrestling Federation with Herb Abrams in early 1991 because Herb was going to put him back in the ring. Because Andre still wanted to wrestle.
But Vince said no, right?
Well, Andre made the TV appearances, but then Vince called him and said, you don't belong there. You're not going to get paid well there. You belong here. Get back here. Did the same thing to Greg Valentine.
Yeah.
So, you know, because they were loyal to, you know, to the WWF and to the McMahons, they both went. They both came back. Well, then after this pay-per-view, and then after Andre did the European tour, Vince told Andre to go home. It's like, look, you know, your career's over with. There's not much more we can do with you, and you can't move.
Yeah, and it's not like he's a guy like Piper or Macho. He can't talk, so you can't put Andre in commentary. You can't.
No, it doesn't. It wouldn't work.
He only works in the ring. I mean, this was cool. This was a nice little one-off that he could be with the Bushwhackers. But it's not like he's a manager. He's like, once he's done, you kind of just got to send him home.
Right.
There's not really anything else. Like, he can't be
a
trainer.
By the way, he did not like.
I know.
He was pissed.
There's not a role for him, though. You can't blame Vince. There wasn't a role.
Oh, and, no, this is one of those times where I do not blame Vince for being like, look, I mean, what are you going to do, make Andre an agent?
No, you can't. And it's and this shows you what a good guy Vince is, too, even though everybody in the world shits on him. To the guys that he likes and he respects, he does have their back. And Andre's one of those guys.
Right. Well, that's also because Andre, you know, goes back to the Vince Sr. days.
So when he told Andre, "Don't you can't work here anymore," it was not a, you're not making me money, you're not a draw. It's a, you need to worry about your health. You it's just not healthy for you to be in this predicament. Because Andre was always a draw. He could have found a way to cap them and made money, and but he was, he did the right thing for Andre by telling Andre, all right, it's time to leave.
Well, because Andre also moved merch.
Yeah.
And it's just, but no, I do agree with you, is that like Vince was looking out for Andre's best interest health-wise.
Now, just because we haven't really got to talk about these two guys a lot, and I will throw it over to Stevie and Eric soon to talk about the match, but I want to ask you, Doug, what do you think it was, not only for you as a kid, but for a lot of the kids, that really gravitated them towards the Bushwhackers?
Whoa! Yeah!
They can't see you.
Well, they could hear me. I stuck in impressions, but I think I was almost close with that.
It's all New Zealandish.
Thank you. They were just... They were... Basically, like... It was definitely a different side of them than what everybody got to see in like mid-south or mid-south and
they
Crockett.
Were heels, right?
Yeah, they were bloodthirsty heels. They come here and they're licking kids and they're marching around and they're goofy.
That doesn't age well, by the way, licking kids. Can't do that anymore.
No, you do that, you're in the back of a fucking cop car. Like, it was just. I don't know. To me, it was just like, oh, my God, these guys are so good. It's the cartoon aspect, right?
Yeah.
Like, I swear to God, like, WWF, and they did, I know, in the 80s with Hogan's, you know, rock and wrestling cartoon.
I loved it.
But the, I did, too. But the WWF, I swear, in the 90s, could have had a couple of Saturday morning cartoons based on some of these guys.
100%, yeah.
All right, the Bushwhackers would have been great cartoon characters. And I'm not just saying that because, again, they were marketable. All right, they had the Hasbro figures, the Squirtheads, you know, like I was just talking about.
Yeah.
They were on T-shirts. I had a Bushwhacker school folder. I am not lying. You know, obviously the hat, they have, they're Bushwhacker teddy bears. When you find characters you can market, all right, and especially geared towards the kids, because they were very kid-friendly.
Yeah.
You push them, even though, like, Luke and Butch were not, like, the greatest tag team, they didn't have a lot of success, they were mainly just hired just to do public appearances.
Yeah,
that's why they actually Vince kept them around till 96, mainly just because, look, you know, we have, you know, like if somebody wanted WWF wrestlers to go to like something at, like a kid's hospital or something like that, or do like a charity fundraiser, Vince would call Luke, Butch, you guys busy? No, mate. Okay, can you go to Children's Hospital, entertain some kids?
Oh!
And they would, because they loved to put smiles on kids' faces.
Yeah. Their managers can blow me, but, or at least their manager now.
Oh, the guy that, well, we don't need to talk about that because I'd rather just keep the memories I have of them as a kid.
Yeah.
Like the Bushwhackers were just special.
What would you rate this match?
I would actually rate it. I don't think it was the greatest match. but I would give it a 5. And Earthquake and Typhoon deserve a lot of credit, too. I mean, they were really good monster heels.
They were.
And Quake could work.
Yeah, no, Quake was great. He just... It bothers me that he was, like, on the last train of big men to go against Hogan. Because he was kind of, like, one of the last ones. I mean, Yoko, technically, but... It felt like by the time they got the Quake... The Hogan versus the oversized giant was kind of overplayed.
Right.
Or it was getting there, and it sucks because Earthquake was awesome.
Right.
And you really wanted to see that program. And I still was entertained by the rivalry, but it felt like you had already seen it so much because you had Big Boss Man and his heel run. You know, you had...
Bundy.
Andre. You were used to Hogan go against a fat guy.
Right.
So, but I love Earthquake, and I love Tugboat. I'd give this a 6 on entertainment value because I was heavily entertained the whole 6 minutes and 27 seconds. Eric, what would you rate it?
I thought it was an okay match. It wasn't my cup of tea, but I'll give it a 4 out of 10.
Stevie?
Oh, I thought it was an awful match with a little bit of excitement, but I was happy it ended. This is one of those matches that would have benefited from less time, though. So I'd probably rate it a 5. I'd probably rate it a 5.
All right.
He just shit on the match, and he still gave it a higher rating than what Eric did.
I agree with what he said.
I do, too. Because
if you look at it, especially coming after the Bret Hart, Mr. Perfect match, if you're looking at it from a wrestling perspective, it is god awful.
Right.
But if you're looking at it as a cartoon entertainment perspective, you might be able to get a little more out of it.
You can't really deny, though, that the Bushwhackers, you know, for guys that really couldn't wrestle, they could sell.
Yeah, they could sell. They were going to get beat up.
Yeah. I mean, Greg the Hammer Valentine, you know, we're going to talk about him later on, he is a master technician and all that, and he couldn't sell worth shit.
Yeah.
So, but these guys who could not wrestle... You know, they knew how to tell. Luke sold his ass off.
Yes, he did. Next match, Virgil and Ted DiBiase. This is about years of storytelling culminating here. This is for the $1 million championship. Virgil breaks off. This is probably Virgil's biggest spot ever.
Yeah.
What did you think of the match?
For a match that probably should not be that good... I actually really enjoyed this. I'm going to say that I don't like Virgil. Okay?
He never did it for you? Did you like him as a kid here?
As a kid, yeah, actually, yeah. Okay. So as a kid, like, he was... Because remember, you know, like, when you're a kid, if you're put in front of the TV and you see these characters on there... And you're basically told, all right, this is your good guy, and this is your bad guy. You want to cheer the good guy, and you want to boo the bad guy.
Easy enough.
Right, it's easy enough. Even stupid-ass little kids like me could get it.
Yeah. And at that point, and I feel like I know what you're saying, you don't know if something sucks yet or something. Like, you're not going to sit there, like, 4 years old and be like, well, I hate the way Virgil hit that arm bar.
Yeah.
You know? You're good. You can open the bag. Enjoy some muscles here. But I agree. For a kid, you're just in front of the TV. You're like, oh, he's the good guy. He's going against the scumbag DiBiase. We're rooting for him.
Right. It, like, you know, I think here I was probably 5. But, like, yeah, it's the same thing. If, like, I was sitting there watching it with Dad.
Yeah.
Because he was the reason why I watched it. Or, like, if I was at Papa's house, I'd watch it with him. And I would actually ask, you know, who do I cheer for? And they would tell me. I go, who's a good guy? Who's a good guy? Who's a bad guy? And they would tell me. And it was easy being told that then. Because, you know, 4 or 5 years old, you really can't form your own opinion.
No, not yet.
But with Virgil, and this was... Virgil could not wrestle, but he also knew how to navigate himself in the ring with DiBiase.
Yeah, they did have decent chemistry.
Yeah.
And you could tell DiBiase liked Virgil because he made him look good.
Right. He was the only one that actually gave a damn enough to make him look good.
Yeah.
Now,
I don't quite remember, Doug. Did they try with the push at all after this for Virgil? Like, do they do anything with him after this? Or?
I mean, he carried the belt for a few months, and then they gave the belt back to DiBiase because they were just going to – they had different plans for Ted. So they were going to put him – I mean, it was not long after this they put him in the tag team with IRS.
Okay.
DiBiase?
Yeah.
He was in the tag team with IRS?
DiBiase and IRS?
Yeah, I don't remember that.
Oh, buddy, I can't.
I was just going to say, how drunk are you?
Not drunk at all. Wait for the show to happen.
But no, it was, yeah. So, like, they kept the $1 million belt on Virgil for a few months, and then right before Survivor Series, he dropped it back to DiBiase, thanks to the Repo Man.
What a yank was stupid anyway. Is that a hot take? That'll probably piss some people
off. Oh, I'm pretty sure we're going to get
DiBiase
hit.
DiBiase's better at himself. He doesn't need stupid IRS. And I like IRS, but I hated the accountant gimmick, and I never really thought it was that. Like, I get he was a heel, and I won't get to him, but...
Right.
Fuck Buddy Ink. Let's talk about Sherry.
Oh, please. Like, I remember I wanted to do a show on her, but we never... It never happened.
Yeah.
What did you think of Sherry here? Because I personally love her when Macho Man does his heel turn, but I love her with the Nasties and WCW and other stuff like that. No, not the Nasties, Harlem Heat, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I like her when she goes in the Nasties armpit. But what did you think of her with DiBiase?
I thought she was great. I mean, I think her best work was probably with Shawn Michaels.
Yeah.
Or as Queen Sherry with Macho King. But here I thought she did real well. And I loved how she did, like, she came in and she... You know, beat the hell, or like she whacked Virgil with the purse, and then Hebner threw her out of ringside. And then like she went nuts like usual.
Yeah.
I thought it was pretty good. Like I liked her. Well, first of all, I liked her altogether.
I thought the match was okay. I mean, Ted carried the match.
He deserves to end his career as a giant. But yeah, DiBiase, because, I mean, Money Inc. you can blame me for. Why the hell did you forget about Money Inc.? But I don't think you can blame me for forgetting that Sherry was with DiBiase. Because I don't remember that very often.
Right, well, it was only, like, unless, like, you have access to... Like all the WWF's weekly TV shows.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some stuff on the network where the two of them like are together. Like, obviously WrestleMania 7 when she joined up with them. This year, Survivor Series, Royal Rumble when she came out with them. A Saturday night's main event. So like, the main programs that are like on the network from 1991.
Yeah.
She's with them. But if like you don't have, like if you don't watch him, then no, you don't know.
No.
But I'll give this match. I didn't like it. I thought it's the best Virgil ever got. It was, and he got a good pop. But I didn't think the action was that great. I think DiBiase tried his best. Piper's commentary really made it for me because he was so into Virgil, and you know there was backstory there too.
Yeah. Well, the backstory is that he's the one that convinced Virgil that you're better than this.
Yeah. So it was nice seeing Virgil do it. It was nice hearing Piper. I'll give it another 6.
13, I mean, we could have done this in 7 minutes.
Yeah.
So I'm going to give it a 6 myself, although I did enjoy this. And, yeah, this was the best Virgil ever looked. Well, this is the best he ever looked, but he didn't do much.
Yeah. DiBiase carried him.
Yeah.
Eric.
I give it a 3. I mean, DiBiase carried the match. I don't think entertaining match for me.
All right, Stevie?
I give it a 6. I thought it was a solid match with a upset ending. And Virgil wasn't established at the time, but DiBiase was. So I'm probably going to end up giving it a 6.
I agree. Yeah, I just think the story here was strong.
It was a very strong story. When Virgil hits us with the lawsuit, Eric's paying it. Because, you know, we're going to get
honest.
Virgil is a cheap bastard.
Oh, no, he is. I'm just saying is that, like, Eric just shit on Virgil's crowning moment, so we're going to get hit with defamation in character.
And then he'll ask us to buy some of his merchandise.
I keep it 100 on this show.
That's the hottest take you've ever had. You never talk shit. What are you talking about?
He talks shit on Facebook. Like, that is a strong suit.
Yeah.
Like, typing with a keyboard. And to be honest with you, a lot of people are like that.
Yeah.
I like to use my mouth.
Oh, we know.
Yeah, we know that.
Yeah.
A lot of men know that. Big Boss Man and Monty, it was right there. Big Boss Man and Monty, speaking of, in the jailhouse match.
Yeah.
And
speaking of using your mouth.
And I think we can get away with that because the amount of, like, prison rape jokes that they cut during this was pretty kind of disgusting thinking about it. I mean, you don't really realize back then, but, like, when the gorilla's like, Monty's going to have a hard time sitting tonight or some shit like that, or his legs are going to be hurting. It's like, Jesus Christ. It's like, we get it. He's going to jail. And like the way the big guy looks at the Mountie, and he says something too, the one behind bars.
Ha ha.
Yeah.
Don't you like the way leather just feels against your body?
Yeah. So it's like creepy. It's like, it's very implied that the Mountie's getting, you know, whatever.
That is just sad that I nailed it.
Yeah.
And
you knew it word for word.
We just watched it yesterday.
Yeah, but that was a like a practicing in the mirror type rendition. That wasn't just a one watch. I thought the match for what it was very entertaining. I think you and me are one of the few people that enjoyed Big Boss Man's face run, because a lot of people say he's a way better heel, and I did like him as a heel.
He was a really good heel, but guess what? I enjoyed him as a baby face. He was actually my pick to win the 1992 Royal Rumble.
Well, because he's got the best theme song. That's like a baby face theme. Hard time.
Yeah.
I butchered that.
Why do you think I fucking picked it in the intro?
No, you didn't. Eric did. But but the Mountie, let's talk about the Mountie a little bit, because I think he's underrated. And yes, he was annoying, but he was a good worker. And the character was stupid, but he made it work, and he was one of the most reviled heels on the roster.
Exactly, but here's the thing. He could not be the Mountie in Canada. Oh, for Christ's sake. they would not let him be the Mountie in Canada. The Canadian mounted police thought that this was, you know, disrespectful to them. So when they had to do shows in Toronto or anything like that, they told him that he's got to go by his real name. He cannot be the Mountie. And of course, you know, the WWF had a very strong presence in Canada.
So that's why he would go as John Paul, whatever, right?
Jack Rougeau.
Did you like him better as the Mountie or with PCO or whatever the fuck his name is?
So anyway, like I actually liked him as the Mountie by himself.
Okay.
And here's the thing about Jacques Rougeau. Jacques Rougeau was also a tough son of a bitch.
Yeah.
And everybody knows the story about, you know, his interaction with Dynamite Kid, you know, when he punched Dynamite in the face and knocked out his teeth.
Yeah.
Well, Dynamite was plotting his revenge, and this is how smart Jacques was. Jacques went up to Dino Bravo, because Dino Bravo was a stooge to the Bulldogs, and handed him a piece of paper with a name and a number on it, and says, if I do not call this guy every night to let him know that I'm okay, then he comes looking for people that he knows are my enemy. So Dino took it back to Dynamite and said, if you fucking go after him, you're going to get killed. So he got himself out of trouble. I mean, Jacques Rougeau was a dick.
Yeah.
But God bless him.
He was a great heel, though.
He was really good at playing the part.
Like, he could have done a main event match with Hogan if they needed him to be honest.
He was that good. Like, if they wanted to push this character into the main event spotlight, because he could get the heat.
Yeah. He was Intercontinental Champion for a couple of days.
For a couple of days. I mean, he poured water. They poured water on Bret Hart, and then he got him with a cattle prod. By the way, that's called electrocution.
Yeah.
So he electrocuted Bret Hart, and people wanted to kill him for that.
Yeah.
But the whole feud with the Boss Man, too, was kind of cool, which actually, it started right after WrestleMania.
Yeah. This was the culmination, right?
Yeah. But to me, this is one of my all-time favorite matches. It's my favorite match on this show. It wasn't even really a classic wrestling match. It was so fun to watch.
Yeah, it was entertaining for sure. Eric, what did you think?
I thought it was a fun match. I mean, I enjoyed it. I watched it last week with Doug and then today, so it was a fun match. I give it a 7 out of 10.
All right. Stevie, what do you think?
I thought it was a boring match for the most part, but it didn't go too long, so that's okay. The Mounties matches were so slow, though. You know what I mean? So all right. I'd probably rate it a 6.
Absolutely. I'd probably go 6 as well. I didn't mind it that much. I thought it was good for what it was. He is right about the slow pacing. I don't mind slow pacing sometimes, though, if it's with good storytelling. And I thought the story here was strong.
The storytelling here was very good. And first of all, like, you can't really keep going fast. I mean, they were already kind of blowing their load with what they were giving us, because this is just the first half of the show.
Yeah.
And you don't want to give too much in that first half, because then why is anybody going to want to watch the second half?
Yeah, but I liked it for what it was. But let's move on.
I can't give it a rating?
No, you talked enough about it.
Okay.
All right, Legion of Doom, and then, yeah, you can give it. What would you rate it?
8. Fuck the 3 of you.
I give it a 7.
Well, the whole storyline was perfect. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you like the storyline there.
Okay.
You feel better?
Yeah.
He's trying to launch a podcast. He's got to have hot takes.
Yeah.
Now, next up, Legion of Doom and Nasty Boys, my favorite match on the card. I know this wasn't the greatest wrestling match, but there's something my favorite facet of wrestling is tag team wrestling. I love tag team wrestling, and WWF has notoriously been very spotty with their tag team wrestling. So they go through great periods. They go through shitty, shitty, shitty Techno Team 2000 periods. This is like a tag team wrestling, like, fans, like, wet dream. Like, for this era, the Nasty Boys and the Legion of Doom, like, these are my two favorite teams. My favorite WCW team against my favorite, classic NWA team.
Right.
I know it's the same shit, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Like, from the, for the time period. So seeing the Legion of Doom and the Nasty Boys go at it was incredibly fun for me, especially in a street fight. I thought the right guys won. I thought the it was entertaining enough. It only needed to go 8 minutes. It did not need to go any longer. For what it was, I thought it was good. I'm going to give it 8 stars. With that, what did you think,
Steve? Yeah, I love this match, too.
Actually, you can go first.
It was a classic tag team match.
Okay.
I'll give it an 8, too.
Sweet.
Two legendary teams.
What did you think, Steve?
It was a good moment with LOD winning the titles, but I had like nothing like negative to say about it, because back then, like the LOD, they were the hottest tag team, so I probably rated it an 8.
Okay. They agree with me. What do you think, Doug?
I give it an 8 too, because again, like, there was nothing really wrong, like, with this card at all, except for, like, I probably would have put, like, stuff in, like, different spots.
Okay.
Like, because here's the thing. You had 5 matches, then you had an intermission to where, like, you had to give people, like, time to, like, recuperate and all that because of everything you had just done. Like, Brett wins the title in the first half of the show. Virgil wins the $1 million title. Boss Man beats Monty and sends Monty to the can.
Yeah.
And like, you have to do the intermission with some interviews, and they show, like, a few vignettes on what was going on with the Mountie. But, like, it's like a concert, right? Let's say for, like, and Dan, I'm actually just going to do this because, you know, he's one of your favorites, but, like, a Machine Gun Kelly concert.
Yeah.
Okay? He doesn't want to play all of his hits in the first half hour of the show.
Right.
All right, because then, like, you know how, like, they kind of take, like, the intermission or whatever?
Yeah.
You want to play, like, you want to start off hot with, like, Jawbreaker or something like that.
Yeah, dude, you'd say that.
Then do a couple of, like, his shitty, like, old stuff. And then, you know, hit it with My Bloody Valentine and all that. And then you want to end hot.
Yeah.
Obviously. But, and so it's like the same thing here. But, like, getting to Legion of Doom and Nasty Boys, this is actually the perfect match to come back from a break from. Because now it's like, okay, we're recuperated. You know, we had 5 or 10 minutes to relax. Let's get this going. And it was a hot, so they were back to being a hot crowd again.
I agree.
But I would give this an 8. I thought this match was great. And it was the perfect kind of match for both teams.
Absolutely. 8s all around. Now let's go into the pee break. IRS and Greg the Hammer Valentine. Can you give me the background to this? Because this didn't really make sense to me last night. I watched it with you. I still don't really get, like, the story, if there was one. Hammer's a face, which does not make sense to me.
So the way WWF kind of did their pay-per-views back then was, obviously they do their first set of matches or whatever, then an intermission, then they come back, and like sometimes on a WrestleMania, like they do like a pee break match, which makes no sense after they already took the intermission where everybody's supposed to pee, but they'll do like a pee break match, and then they'll do like 1 or 2 big ones, and then another pee break before the main event.
Right.
So obviously they're counting on people having bad bladders. But like they always, because they don't want too many people to, get too tired for the main event, you have to have a match that nobody really cares about before the main event.
Yeah.
And that's what this was. This match was basically because they had big plans for IRS. And they needed to give him somebody that, like, he could get over on. And Valentine was that person, which I don't really understand it either. I never bought Greg Valentine as a babyface. I mean, this would have been the perfect thing to use Tito for.
Yeah.
All right, if we're speaking honestly. Either that or Snuka.
Yeah.
It would have gave IRS a little more credibility beating them. Not that beating Hammer isn't a big deal, but a babyface Hammer really doesn't mean much to me.
Right.
Or like, you know, Coco, instead of him doing a dark match, put Valentine against Kato in the dark match and do have Coco wrestle IRS. That would scratch, but I get it.
Guys, I'll be back in a minute.
Okay. We're finishing soon, so come back soon. Hammer, was he the babyface in the dog collar match?
No.
Piper was the babyface,
yeah.
Right? Yeah. So, yeah, it doesn't make sense to me. Let's give it a rating.
I'd go 3. It just did not make sense. The wrestling was fine. Mike Rotunda is a great worker. Hammer's a great worker. There was just, I felt like this whole show had great stories and great, like, build-ups. So even, like, the matches where the wrestling wasn't that good, I was still into it.
Right.
Like your Bushwhacker deal and shit. This wasn't one of them. This didn't feel like the build-up was adequate, and the match was just okay to me. So I'll give it a 3.
I'll give it a 3.5.
Yeah, I mean, I do agree with you. Like, there was no story there.
I mean, you don't always need that, but this show was very strong on stories.
Yeah, this show was very strong on build. You know, last year we did SummerSlam, right? We missed you. last year we did SummerSlam 90, right?
Yeah.
And that was a show that had quite a few matches that there really was no build to them or whatever. So, like, that was fine. Like, you could get away with a match that, you know, there was no build.
Yeah.
But here, when 90% of your, well, 90 to 95% of your matches are based on build, but you have one match is kind of thrown together, yeah, it doesn't really make any sense. But yeah, no, I give it a 3.5. And that's not a knock on IRS. The IRS is another guy that could have, you know, if they wanted him to, he could have had a main event program with Hogan.
Yeah. You have no shit on him earlier. I agree. Stevie.
I thought it was a quick match to put over IRS as a mid-card heel. Valentine was one of those boring wrestlers in this era. So seeing him as a face seemed pretty weird. Because usually he would be a heel. You know what I mean?
Yeah. What would you rate it?
I'd probably rate it a 3.
Okay. Eric?
I'll give it a 2. I don't really remember this watching this match. So.
Okay. All right, boys, main event time. We'll talk about the wedding a little bit, but there's not a whole lot of analysis to give there.
So. Not really. I mean, there's a little bit to talk about, and I'll get into, like, the wedding reception.
Yes. Hulk Hogan and the Ultimate Warrior, Warrior's last performance here until he comes back in 96?
No, he came back at WrestleMania 8, so he came back in 92.
Okay. Against Colonel Mustafa, General Adnan, and the one and only Sergeant Slaughter.
Yeah, the Triangle of Terror, by the way.
The Triangle of Terror, the Iraqi imposers, the beast from the Middle East.
I don't know.
And Sid Justice was the referee. And Sid Justice actually cut a great promo during the intermission.
He's babyface here, right?
But he ended up being babyface, yeah. But, like, at first, nobody knew where he stood.
Yeah.
It's funny. Like, Mean Gene asked him in the interview during the intermission. He goes, Sid, how are you going to call this one? And Sid goes, Mean Gene, if I've been asked that question once, I've been asked it 100 times. And the question is, Sid Justice, where do you stand? He goes, well, I think I've answered that question at least 1,000 times. And the answer is, I'm a man that stands alone. And to me, that was just like, watching that as a little kid, I'm like, like, I'm like hooked. And I'm like, oh my God, what's he going to do? And, just like, I mean, obviously, you know, I was thrilled that he kind of sided with the baby faces.
Yeah. I forgot about his run as Sid Justice.
What did you think of this match, Doug? I love Slaughter's heel run, so.
Slaughter's heel run was good. Again, not really a good wrestling match, but because there was story here.
Yeah.
And also, too, like, they kept talking about how the Warrior basically got put through hell thanks to Undertaker and Jake the Snake. So it did not, again, it does not make sense to me that he was the one teaming with Hogan here. Because
yeah.
he had his own problem. He had his own issues with Undertaker and Jake.
But he was huge, so.
Yeah, which is why they did it. And this was obviously called the match made in hell. I thought it was a decent match. I'm giving it a 6.
All right. Stevie?
Well, to be honest, I feared it being a terrible match, but it ended up being a passable at least. The energy that Hogan and Warrior could get out of the crowd was unmatched in this era. So I'd probably rate it a 6.
All right. Eric?
It was an okay main event. I'll give it 5.5.
Yeah, I mean, there was a spectacle there. Because was this the end of the Slaughter thing, pretty much?
Yeah, because then he started cutting a promo saying he wanted to get his country back.
Yeah.
Or the vignettes, which were actually very touching to watch.
Yeah.
He had me sold at 5 years old.
So this is pretty much the end of that experiment of poor Sarge, who seems like the nicest guy in real life, but him getting death threats and stuff. And
yeah. Wanting to get his country back and all that, which a lot of those are actually on YouTube, because there's actually this guy, well, the YouTube channel is called Wrestling with Paul, and they did like a Glory Days of WWF like thing where they started like sometime in 86, and it was like, they did like month videos.
Yeah.
So like September 86, you know, all that, and like went through all the 91s or up until like 1996. And a lot of Sarge's stuff, his vignettes and stuff are in those videos. So like from September and October and November of 91, you'll get to see like all of them.
Gotcha.
Because he did quite a few. Like he was in an elementary school. He was in a cemetery.
That's sweet.
They were really good vignettes.
Well, they needed it because they needed to get him back on the good side.
Yeah.
Because people weren't happy.
No, they were not happy at all. But, and here's another thing I wanted to kind of bring up too. The WWF is so heavy on the babyface side. But again, it's, you know, because they were trying to have characters that you can market.
Yeah.
On the heel side, they were kind of heavy too, but I always felt like that serious babyface side, like that scale just tipped way up.
It did, but you did have the Andres at one point, and, you know, Rick came in and helped with that a lot. And you kind of, Rick already debuted by this point, right?
He hadn't debuted yet, but Heenan said he was coming in.
Yeah, because Heenan said his name during the thing.
Yeah. His actual debut... which I actually thought about doing that, but we're going to do the Nitro instead.
Yeah.
His actual debut was on an episode of Primetime Wrestling. This is his first appearance, September 9th, 1991.
Because he had the gold belt tonight. Well, not tonight, but during this, and he said the real world championship.
Yeah, because that actually was the big gold. That was not the replica. That was actually the real world title.
Yes.
And... which, by the way, pissed off WCW to no end, but Flair technically owned the title. Because back in those days, you had to put a 20... If you were the champion, the NWA champion, you had to put a $25,000 deposit on the title in order to hold it. And when you lose the title, you get your deposit back.
Yeah, but it's just like collateral.
But Jim Herd did not want to give Flair his money back.
So Ric Flair told him to blow.
Yeah, pretty much.
All right, we all gave our rating. Did you want to talk about the wedding real quick a little bit?
Yeah.
Before we head home?
All right. Randy Savage and Elizabeth get married on screen. They've been married in real life since 1984. I mean, they're not married anymore, but...
Well, no shit.
Anyway. So They got married on screen, and then, like, they did the thing, the ceremony. Nobody interrupted it. Then they have the wedding reception, which was a Coliseum Home Video exclusive, but since Peacock is not Coliseum Home Video, they didn't have it, which was stupid. But I used to have the Coliseum Home Video, so I've seen it, like, 1,000 times. And they do the thing, you know, they do the cutting of the cake, the first dance, Mean Gene with toast, and then they go through the wedding gifts because Savage can't keep his hands off the presents. And in one of the boxes is a cobra. So Elizabeth, you know, freaks the fuck out. Undertaker nails Macho Man in the head with the urn, and Jake the Snake grabs the cobra, and he's trying to put it on Elizabeth.
Yeah.
But Sid Justice comes in with a chair and says, get the hell out of here. And kind of chases him off. And that's where it starts Sid's babyface run. So, like, that was, like, the most. And I remember actually seeing that because, again, we didn't see that, you know, that night, you know, watching SummerSlam live on pay-per-view.
Yeah.
I found out about it, like, a week and a half after. Because I don't even think they showed it that weekend on television. They may have, but I don't remember. It was either like that weekend or the weekend after. And I remember seeing that, and I'm like, when did that happen? And I remember Dad was just like, wait, what? Because he didn't know it happened either. And I'm just like, why would they do such a thing? And he goes, because they're bad people. You know, because he's trying to keep up the, you know, keep up the act. But, yeah, like, that was just, like, that was basically Jake the Snake and Undertaker kind of just proving themselves to be, like, top-level heels. And Sid Justice being a babyface, which, by the way, he did not want to do. Vince McMahon brought him in with visions of making him the next Hulk Hogan, the next big babyface, because he knew Hogan wanted to leave.
Yeah.
And Sid said no. He goes, I don't want to be a babyface. Because Sid had actually said, he goes, I don't like people.
Yeah, well, he's a better heel.
Yeah.
His Sid Vicious run against Shawn Michaels, I still hold that to high regard. Even though people shit on that era of time, I liked him better when he came back to Sid Vicious.
When he beat Shawn in 96?
Yeah.
All right, as Psycho said, right?
Yeah.
I actually...
Was he not called Sid Vicious? I don't know. But it,
Sid Vicious was the WCW name.
But he was heel Sid.
Yeah.
Psycho Sid, whatever the fuck. He was a
well,
bad
he
guy.
Came back. He was kind of a babyface, but that was also in Madison Square Garden, by the way.
Yeah.
And they cheered him. Like, Sid blasted a 65-year-old man in the chest with a video camera, and he got a babyface pop for winning the title.
Yeah, but Shawn Michaels was a dirtbag.
Yeah, I think people knew that. That's why they booed him.
Yeah. All right, guys, let's give final thoughts and ratings and get the hell out of here. This is a hell of a show, hell of a pay-per-view. You did it justice, Doug. We're going to start with
Good job, Doug.
We're going to start with Eric here. Final thoughts and your ratings.
Yes, sir.
Go.
I thought it was a solid pay-per-view for the time in the 90s, so some of the matches were not my cup of tea, but some of the matches were very entertaining. So I give it a solid 7.
Okay. Stevie, final thoughts and rating.
Well, it was a below average show. Was terrible. But I think Hard and Perfect saved the pay-per-view, so I'd probably give it a 7. I mean, well, yeah, I would say a 7.
All right. I would say that this is Golden Era at its finest. My review's a bit different than the other two. I really like this one. I was thoroughly entertained by most of what I've seen yesterday and the day before. Watching this again, I realized what kind of made me love the Golden Era and why, like, you're not supposed to take it seriously. It's supposed to be a cartoon, but it's a hella fun cartoon to watch. So I enjoyed everything for what it was. I enjoyed everything I saw. I'm giving it an 8 out of 10. Doug, we're going to go home on you here. What do you got?
Okay. One of my all-time favorite SummerSlams. One of my all-time favorite pay-per-views. I love this era. I love 91 and 92. Especially, you know, like probably 89 or 88 through 92 is probably like my stuff.
Yeah.
Because I know a lot about, you know, that period in time. May not have been the best, like, business-wise, but they really kicked up in merch. They had marketable characters. And this pay-per-view, I get it's not some people's cup of tea, but, you know, I enjoyed it, and I happen to have a lot of authority on this show. So I give the pay-per-view an 8.5.
All right.
Okay. And I love this time period, 91, because this 91 and 92, I can actually remember what happened in those years just obviously I've watched a lot of it, but I can remember a lot of it from memory too.
Yeah.
Because I was glued to the TV every weekend.
Okay.
Watching this.
And with that being said, we'll see everybody next week. This is beautiful.
Yeah. Next week, SummerSlam 2000. So it's going to be one of your jams.
Yeah. It's going to be a vastly different type of program. Stevie, Eric, thank you again. And Doug, thanks for being here. And we'll see everybody next time.
Later.
Later.
Yep.